see it as very important, you know, to have young tourists coming into our space, because for them it's a complete surprise then to find in, for them, you know, expensive city close to the Dam Square, a few minutes, such an enormous alternative space. And I do have the experience also that, you know, for example, people come in and they're like really surprised. You can talk to them. I once talked to a truck driver from England, you know, who just by accident strolled in and then was surprised, bought a poster. And so it's really important. Doesn't, you know, it's not like we are only focused on what a lot of these spaces, you know, like in the East or the Apple, they're mainly for, although of course for the AFK they say, well, we also do education, we do this for the neighborhood, but mainly they're just focused on, you know, their website and the Instagram, on in the art world, you know, it's very exclusive. All the talks and all the readings and everything they do is very, which is good, you know, because that's part of the art world, which also is going to develop into a new direction, because the world has to change, is changing. Yeah. But we are mostly focused on the neighborhood, you know, because still a lot of artists live there.
I wanted to say, but still, even for young artists, like for instance, now it's March and we actually had an open month where there was an open call, yeah, and people could just submit over 200 artists and collectors.
250.
Yeah, submitted plans to host a night or maybe to put up their own show.
Yeah.
And it's amazing to see how many people, or how it gave space to so many young artists, still, you know,
not only young artists.
No, and older artists. Well, yeah. I was actually part of it.
Yeah.
I'm old. But the nice thing, I think, is about, you said, you know, you're doing it for the neighborhood, and then you have this occasional
yeah, and the neighborhood is also the tourist.
Is exactly. Well, and it's a combination of both, and it's still like a place in the city center, and I think that is the most important thing, where you can go. And it's actually the only place where you could meet everybody.
Yeah.
Where you meet the accidental tourist that,
yeah,
walks in.
Yeah.
Where you meet the, you know, the fine art retreat student,
yeah,
with someone from the neighborhood living there. Whereas,
yeah,
like if you look at exactly as you said, it's something like the Apple, which is a beautiful place, but it is very much catered toward one small scene. I think. Wouter, is that also a reason why you think that Mokum, Hotel Mokum or Mokum Kracht, as they're now called,
mm-hmm,
are focusing on in and around the city center? Because actually recently the organization behind it squatted a new building on the Kinkerstraat, which is also quite central in Amsterdam.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I think yeah, I think most people consider that center as well, right? Or most friends I know.
That is within the vicinity of, well, which is inside the ring, the highway surrounding Amsterdam. We still,
right,
have,
yeah, yeah, exactly,
center.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, this was like a merge of so Hotel Mokum, Kinder van Mokum, which is another group of squatters and some other individuals, and it's a former laundromat in the Kinkerstraat. The Kinkerstraat used to be a working class neighborhood, and then you have the Jan Pieter Heijstraat on the corner, which is one of the most heavily gentrified areas in Amsterdam, I think, at the moment. Yeah, with a huge other Patrick is also squatted now.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But this place, I think we always try to do something in the center because, yeah, we want to reclaim Pak Mokum terug. It's like the idea to reclaim the center. So Hotel Mokum was in the Marnixstraat, and we wanted to have cheap culture. It's like the area with the Leidseplein and all the theaters, which is, let's say, yeah, expensive culture, not accessible for everyone. And we wanted to counter this with like, yeah, free culture. Mostly our events were free on donation. I think what's really interesting, there's this new current that people have certain ideas with streets and who should be there, who should live there. So I know it's in the Marnixstraat that most people that are in their 50s, 60s understand what squatting is. They knew it from back in the day, and you don't need to explain what you're doing. It was mostly people my age in their 30s that would say like, yeah, but I don't disagree with squatting, but not in this street because this is an expensive street. And it's really like this idea, like same with the municipality saying, like, if you want to have alternative culture, fine, we all like that, but do it here.
Yeah.
And then it's seen as this attraction, like, oh yeah, maybe this person, if he feels a bit funky.
Anymore, you know.
What do you mean?
No, it's not, that's not the point of view of the city.
Of the city.
No, because like for the W139 and the whole block, you know, with one squatter.
Yeah.
All the ground floor, working spaces are now studios, because when we renovated it, we were all involved in the renovation. So we had a big say in how it was renovated. And now, we convinced the municipality that they have to support the W139 because we don't have enough money. So they spend a little money on the W139. But next to that, I made a plan. I told the city, you have to buy all the studios back because they're from a corporation now. And the corporation is just raising the rents. You know, they were like 300 euros a month.
Yeah.
And now they're pushing everybody out and it's going to 1,200 a month. So it's still in one hand now. And they agreed, you know. So the city says...
City agreed.
The studios downstairs in the whole block, so it's about 30 studios.
Yeah.
And so I said, well, I wrote a letter to Femke Halsema. I said, well, now is the time to buy it back because you want to bring Amsterdam back to the Amsterdam people. And so they hired a really fancy real estate guy, a young guy, a nice guy. First time I met him, I had a coffee with him, and then after, I think 10 minutes, he said, well, you have to know, I'm really a liberal guy, you know, I'm right wing. He saw me as a kind of like anarchist or whatever. So it's really, but he's good, you know, on that level, because he does the talking with the corporation. And the corporation is now agreeing to kind of like investigate the idea. And we are going to buy all the studios back. And that is supported by the NVZ Dijk, you know. There's a really good woman there, Dani Albers. And so she's pushing it silently into the town government, you know. Because I say, well, now, you know, it's still in one hand. And the guy, the corporation, one day is going to sell it to whatever, BlackRock or, you know, anybody who wants it. And it's really a diamond in the city, you know, to own like 35 of these ground floor spaces where you can have shops or whatever. And so they're really putting...
So is there then a shift politically? Because we actually, Amsterdam has and has always had a more of a leftist municipality, always leaning more towards the left or the middle of the left. But then again, we've seen them kind of giving away grounds to, you know, exactly speculants like Blackstone, you know, selling off properties. So do you think that they are kind of, maybe they're aware of what their role was in this gentrification of the city and thus kind of pushing out?
No, but there's more involved. I know from, it's also that the police is looking into what kind of drug money is involved in buying all this, you know. So that it's, they say the most important idea is that the social structure of the whole city center is going away, is falling apart, and that's very dangerous, the police says. So it's not like the politicians say.
So it's more informed by, lawmakers than by...
Well, it's also the lawmakers,
and
also it's because I proposed to them, I said, it's a once-in-a-lifetime chance, you know, now it's still in your hands to negotiate and put pressure on the corporation. And they see, because we have the W139, and they see, okay, from there, if they buy it or we, you know, support buying it, then from there, you know, you can kind of like expand the social structure into the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And then, because like the Nieuwmarkt still has a kind of social structure, but our around the Dam Square and, well, maybe in the NSA Almersblad, you know, the other side behind the palace, but our side And there's still a lot of, you know, you have the Bulldog, that's also, of course, a criminal organization behind the Bulldog.
Bulldog is a very famous coffee shop for mainly tourists.
Yeah, they have a hotel,
yeah,
a cafe, and the whole structure, social structure, is very unbalanced there.
Can I then put something on the table and also see how it aligns with the ideology of squatting? If you become an owner of a building, because that is what you're investing in, basically to protect this autonomous identity, but you are becoming an owner, will that change dynamics? Because I think ownership brings different responsibilities, maybe even shifts in ideas. I was wondering what you think about that.
What I can see in kind of my field with the venues, like the concept places, I've seen differences when other places that started from squatting became good plots and then later got financed. It's changed a little bit of the structure of the organization and the program, more based on making more money to make pay for everything, and less about the community and less about the free entrance or the interaction between everybody. I've seen that a little bit change. And on the other hand, yeah, it also kind of varies, of course, what you, how open are you? How many days a night? How many days a week? How many? What is really in the end your goal with the place? And then yeah, there's not much new for the past 20 years that really made a difference or stand out again. And I've seen a lot of places, got evicted and gone. And that's more what happened than places got bought and changed the scenery or something.
Well, I think the biggest problem is the funding. You know, the AFK and the Mondrian are the most important fundings for creative places. And Broedplaatsbeleid is also a disaster for Amsterdam.
Yeah.
It's really bad.
Go ahead.
I think with this Broedplaatsbeleid is like right now the municipality is using the expeditie vrijplaats, which is a answer, I think, to this Broedplaats. And so the Broedplaat, translated breeding ground, is already, the word already says a lot, right? Like you can stay somewhere for a little while, breed on it, and then if you done breeding, rental price probably are higher, and then as an artist you have to leave and go further into the periphery. And this was really like, it's not some phenomenon, it's really it's policy by the city. And the city now is realizing that they, and by doing that kind of makes the center quite boring, the inner center. And now they have this new thing, which is called Expeditie Vrijplaats, which is about a few places in the center. So Steenhoofd is one, which is an area at the...
Right behind Central Station.
Yeah, exactly. And then on the surface, it sounds like, oh yeah, you can do your thing here. We also like Vrijplaats, so it's important for the fabric of the city. But then as soon as if you really start to ask, like, okay, so we can live there? It's like, no, not in the center. Like, there's no houses in the center. Then you have to go to the periphery. Oh, okay. But at least can we like work there 24/7? Like, oh no, sorry, also not. And then you realize that you're so apart from each other because it's really hard work, you know, like it's first you have to clean a place, then there's like all this programming, and it's really magical, I think, because it's really this power of the collective. But with Automokum, it also made me realize that we don't really need the city. We need sometimes some money is nice, but there's other, money that also you can get it with donation or with other stuff. Most of the time, self-organizing, the interesting stuff happens when you organize yourself. Yeah. And the moment there is something like AFK involved, you already have to promise something, which you already structure it in a different way.
The AFK and all this funding is, you know, and that's mostly, I think, because there's curators in those commissions. Not that I have anything against curators, but that's a different breed. But as a, you know, free space, whatever, you go from the ideas from the musicians, you know.
Yeah,
from the artists. Those are the ideas, not from who's organizing, you know.
And and it's based on what we did for 20 years and not what we want to do the next
year. Yeah, but that will change.
Yeah, sure, but that's a must.
Yeah, that's
also
that's
for
the
us
same.
A way to
yeah.
communicate them. But we want to keep it volunteer run, and we want to keep kind of
yeah.
what we're doing, what we were doing.
Yeah.
And then slowly, maybe we will yeah, go back again to our own fully independent.
Yeah, that's better.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
The moment the theater or the venue part of the AFK, the people are, I haven't seen them for years, and they're all sick and tired or left. It's a bit weird to just.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But for the most problem is that, you know, those commission people, they are never looking, you know, at the whole of the city and think like, okay, this is a good space. And maybe, you know, we don't have that much money and communicate with the space, because you cannot communicate with the commission. They just look at it and they say yes or no. And then if they would communicate, you know, you could say like, okay, then we give hockey like this much, and then
new initiatives, they come and go. It's also kind of, yeah, what they do. It's
that's what I found difficult now sometimes with the current climate, is that the new initiatives, like you work really hard, and then there's like no trust at all, you know. And
yeah.
then I'm really like, well, if you want to have like these free spaces, like nice plans with the exposition, we already started, you know, we already squatted this place, let's talk. But then there's no conversation, and it's really you're really hitting a wall. And then this eviction was also just insane, where I was like, well, let's say this crane and 16 police cars or more. And I get, yeah, it was really this image of the 80s, I guess. And it was really like, hey, we're just a bunch of artists. We're not on the rooftop with Molotov cocktails. But it's, yeah, you constantly have to, the stigma is just really strong. And it's really, you really notice the feeling that you're wanted in the city. It's just, like you're unwanted and not part of the linear progress that Amsterdam seems to, yeah, liberal linear progress that Amsterdam seems to go to. But then again, I think it's really an action, like squatting. It's just also an answer to this. It's not, we don't say like, hey, city of Amsterdam, we really like you. It's just the right to the city. We live here and we want space, so we claim it. And
One of the things also is like, you know, I found, or for the WHI, we found out, you know, the value for the city, because we along came a study guy who worked in Africa and South America for microfinance. So he pointed out, you know, on the internet for like VN or whatever, big institution, how they value a cultural space in a city. So, and from there we started, you know, thinking like, and he said, money is not the problem, you know, you have to really assess the value of a space, and then not to, the lower part of the politics, but you really have to go to the mayor and, you know, because they understand that the people are working just day to day, you know, on the AFK, whatever, you know, they're only concerned about their job and their budget. But if you go up, but it's really difficult to get, you know, an entrance. So that's, for example, with the new plans I'm working on, this Jannie Albers, you know, from the MTC Dijk, she has an entrance everywhere. So once she was convinced about my idea really quickly, because she saw the possibilities, then you have this entrance. But as long as you have to talk to the police or the fire brigade or whatever, you know, you're not going anywhere. So that's also why ownership, you know, in some way is the only way nowadays to solve this problem. And, you know, yeah, because if you squat, you know, that's from the beginning, like 40 years ago, when we squatted all the buildings, there was an older guy, one of the older guys, he was a philosopher. Mm-hmm. He said, well, once you squat it and you don't do anything with it, you know, then it's useless. So, because when the police come, or when Femke Halsema comes and looks into it, you know, the mayor, and they don't see anything happening there. I mean, there was, of course, in that time, there was like everything was empty. Nowadays, not. But so you have to do something with the building, and then you have to kind of like communicate that to the, you know, the upper part, if you really want something.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think that's also the what's happening, right? Like it's that's also I feel the stigma that a place is squalid and then the squatters are just there smoking inside or something.
Yeah,
it's a super active scene always, and I think with Hotel Mokum and now the Vasilette, we also really try to actively use media, social media.
Did you try to buy Hotel Mokum?
No, we didn't. Got like
six
chances.
Yeah,
we
six
got,
weeks.
Yeah, we had 6 weeks, and we got to fix it in three
yeah.
days. But what we do is we really go to the media and or create use our own social media to address like, hey, there's a housing crisis first of all, like the worst since the Second World War. Squatting is illegal, but so is leegstand since the 80s. Like it's just an afweging, something you have to decide on, right? And yeah, I think we are really trying actively to break the stigma and I really like the slogan, like Kraken gaat door, squatting continues. Like even if you get evicted, you just continue. And it's also really true, squatting continues so far. It's sometimes it's a little bit less, sometimes more, but it will remain, I think. And maybe like the Kraken verbod will like be a little bit more softened in Amsterdam. That will already be a big... And yet it's political action, of course. I think art space has come by, but the first step is just political action and trying to find housing in a housing crisis.
And actually, we recently had municipal elections, and
mm-hmm.
there were a few parties, three, I think, in total, who've actually took something on squatting into their program, their party programs, where they would say, we need this space in the city. But I was wondering,
mm-hmm.
though, so we're talking about the city center, you know, like which is enclosed by this highway, the Ring. And I'm wondering if we are moved, you know, as a artistic community, if we are moved to a place like the north or the new west or even southeast, is that such a bad thing that the city, maybe city centers are shifting? Maybe our right to the city actually lies in all these new to be developed places?
Well, you know, you have to see it from two sides. First, you know, as an artist, you know, you want to make art and you want to show it. And where? In the beginning, it doesn't matter. You know, if it's in Amstelveen or whatever, as long as your friends from the beginning and then later on more people can come and visit, it's okay. And then, but now, you know, the city, it's, you know, has a problem. So now the AFK and all these funding are going to say, well, you have to do something for the city. So, you know, they double play on us. First, they want you to make art, and then they say, well, whatever, you know, go to the Belt or whatever. And now they say, oh, you make art, you also have to do something for the city. And, but it's kind of like two problems, which they try, the artist or whatever, to solve also for them. But it's their mistake, you know, they,
yeah.
In the time of the, you know, when the politics were like made by the liberals, by the VVD and the PvdA in the city, you know, they made the I Amsterdam, and that was the beginning of the end.
Yeah. Maybe to come back to the center of Amsterdam, what I really like about Amsterdam compared to other bigger cities is that there's, like, you can really in one night, live in East and then go to West to a party and then have some cocktails in the pipe or whatever, go to the center and then to a rave in North. It's really small enough and you can cycle everywhere. So the center is already in several districts, I would say. But then it should just, yeah, the center with this I Amsterdam became a place that you would almost avoid sometimes with your bike. You wouldn't cycle past the Dom. And I think that's really, yeah. That's just not what the city should be. Like the Dom, yeah, first of all, Palace should just be a city hall again, because that's the center. It's for, it's ours. It's from people from Amsterdam, right? And I think this feeling is sometimes gone, or this feeling that the city is ours. Like, this property is literally from everyone who pays tax here or lives here.
Yeah, a lot of
so we have to protect this or to, to remember.
My friends a lot of times pity me that I live in the tourist area.
That's
they say, oh, poor you.
And there's nothing wrong with tourists, of course, but I think there's this I forgot the author, but there's this triangle thing, right, that you need people to, you know, to have a vital neighborhood, you have to, people to live there, work there, and visitors. And As long as you have this flow, then you have an interesting, vibrant city. And if not, then you get like the side house only people work there, the center only visitors, you know. And yeah, I think it's really important to foster this dynamic in the city.
I wanted to share some thoughts because of all the conversations we've been having with different people. So, for example, now I have to think when the We Are Here collective came and they explained their experience of squatting, that in the last, actually, in the last 10 years, the We Are Here movement, they have been the most active squatters in the city. And their actions were not about being able to make art, but they were actually about being able to exist. So I also want to bring the first rent strikes from the 20s that Nehrit Bitsma was, she was a squatter in the 80s and 90s in Amsterdam, and she's a filmmaker. And she did a whole project about the first rent strikes that took place in the 20s and 30s in Amsterdam and in different cities in the Netherlands. Also, actually, the first squatters that started after the Second World War in London were related to the Communist Party, and they were not wearing any anarchist clothes. They were actually just dressed as normal citizens. So actually, squatting, it's a political tool. And it is a political action that is meant to go against actually the regime of property that is articulating the city. And what I've been hearing from you is that you were talking how much actually your neighborhoods were much more working class when you, or even criminal or very dangerous places. So how basically your activities or your initiatives really managed from a grassroots activity to bring life and to bring real city in those areas, and how can that be kept like that instead of becoming a gentrification instrument. Mm-hmm. So we should restore the city, not gentrify it. And it's about maintenance. It's not about the speculation. It's so difficult to with our tools, because artists, we are the professionals of communication. So if you change the rhetorics, if you create new language, you basically are able to inspire whole areas and to make those areas more livable and more cheerful. And but how can we manage that? What we do is not instrumentalized by capitalists to speculate with our city and to steal it back. Because what's happening now, like, yeah, you should move outside. Why you should go to New West? You should go to New West because they want to speculate on the value of New West. And they are already, you know, we are already done with you in the pipe. You should get the hell out. And the only way to stay there is to buy your building. And then you start thinking, like a lot of how you are talking at, it's you are thinking as an owner, as a you know, as a capitalist, actually. Yeah. You're not thinking as a squatter. No. Which, I mean, I'm not, it's just to understand.
No, I know what I'm thinking.
Yeah. so how, and then also the Art Council is playing with us all the time with this thing of every 4 years granting, or every 2 years granting. Basically, we're just instruments of the municipality to gentrify or to give some life here and there whenever they want. And then how can we really claim our right to the city in the sense of like, hey, this area, which for example, it was a project for working class families, in a certain moment has to remain like that because it creates the social balance in the city steady. A city is not only the buildings, it's also the people that live there. So if all working class of all lower income families, they have to leave the city, Amsterdam is never going to be Amsterdam again, because Amsterdam is not actually a only bourgeois wealthy city. It's been a city of multicultural, different layers of society, living together, because in the 70s and 80s, there was really from the municipality a plan to keep social balance intact by really, you know, deciding who would live in certain areas. All different kinds of income should live together. That's the city we want. We don't want a city where only rich people live in the center and all the rest, they have to leave. So I think it's, well, maybe it's a question for you all. Do you think that it is a cultural change that we need to bring forward to make the politicians understand better their city? I have the feeling maybe they don't understand, or maybe they understand too well that, and then we are not on the picture. Are we on the picture or not, you know? And
I'm in the center, yeah. I'm sitting in the center. Well, I think there are some politicians are realizing what's happening, but yeah, I think the power of the corporations, you know, because the liberal rules that they can sell off the social housing, you know, came from the government, and they're, you know, slowing it down now. That I think in the next period they cannot sell it anymore. I read in the newspaper, for example, that like I think 20% of every city should have social housing, and they don't have it. Most cities don't have it anymore. Well, it is what, like, you know, Sjoerd, what you said, and I also see it in my neighborhood, in my house already, because I have a social house. You know, I rent social. But in my building, the top floor, they kicked it out of the social rent. So somebody pays 1,200 euros there, where I pay, I think, 650 or something. So first time he was there, he was giving a party, I was calling him at night and say, hey, you know, it's really noisy, and I'm sleeping next under you. You know, there's my bedroom. And then he said, "Well, you know, listen, I'm paying 1,200. What are you paying?" Yeah, and he came from the south of Amsterdam, so he came from a rich family. But so that was the first time, you know, that something like that happened, and then you feel the pressure, like, oh, the corporation wants this all to go out, and you know. Mm-hmm. Although it's forbidden, they will raise them in. So we started to write letters. You know, the next time somebody left our building, he said it should stay social housing. And then they did. First time 40 years ago when we squatted, you know, there were some old people living. And their roofs were leaking, you know. They had wet curtains, you know. It was really bad to live there. So as squatters, we said to them, you should stop paying rent. They first should, you know, repair your house. And they were afraid. He said, no, no, no. Because, you know, then they will kick me out. And we said, no, we have a lawyer and they're not going to kick you out. So, you know, the social abilities of people to really stand up for their rights is very poor, mostly. Unless you have a good lawyer who comes to the meetings and says, like, you know, really in face, like, no, you know, I'm going to put all the rent on a different bank account, you know, and keep it there. And then first we tell them to repair or to do something. And that's what we did in the beginning. And that's how we got the few older people who still live there, you know, behind us. And they really saw, like, oh, this is going to work.
So did you do a rent strike? You organized rent strike?
Yeah, a lot. And also when we had all contracts, you know, all the squatters had a contract, we said, okay, we're going to pay, everybody's going to pay 100 guilders for whatever space you had, it didn't matter. So it was like 60, 70 buildings who would pay that. It would all go into making all the different houses fireproof, leak-free, have good electricity. So all the rent would go into our own block and not go anywhere else. So that's how we negotiated that with a good lawyer. And also that you could, if you wanted, you could buy after, but nobody did that, I think, except for one guy.
I think the corporation, the Binnenpret, where we are spoken a part of, we come together at least once a month with all the different laden, everybody has a contract. And most people are still involved with the We Are Here groups, with the buitenparlementaire actiegroepen, and we host a couple of anarchist groups. And the OKI volunteers also come from squatter movement or whatever. And we, during the pandemic, we were like a meeting hall because most people were not having spaces where they could come together with large groups and social distance. So we were still kind of part of an infrastructure of direct action groups and local, but at the same time, the corporation, everybody kind of has its own identity and theater or concerts. So it's a bit of two parts, I think, at the moment. We are still part of some sort of infrastructure of independent artists that want to travel the world, see different people, and not going to hotels and can allow to enter the center. But that's kind of the part of the infrastructure that OKI also has. It's international, and for a city, I don't know if that's what the city wants or not. If we can go to outside, as long as the social public transport comes there and people can go to a concert and get back home.
What does the city need?
The city? Yeah, I think less money, more people, just direct, yeah, self maximize, or let's see.
More do it yourself with that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. The of course, and we can live and work in a community way in a monumental building without all the benefits. Of course, we do have a little subsidy, and we have ways to make things happen, and that's our dreams, and things come together there, and yeah, we don't need a curator, or we don't need the city to tell us what to do, and that's changed.
But like, I want to say, like what you say, you know, how can you organize that again? You know, what I see is like, you know, like in the OKI, most important things, you do things, you know, and you can see them, you can hear them. And for like in my block, my neighborhood, you know, because there's a lot of new people on the canals, all the houses were sold. So that's like owners. We're trying to have new meetings, you know, like, because before we would have meetings like every 2 months with all the squatters and all the people who live there, like more than 100 people. You can imagine how these were, these meetings. You know.
Yeah.
So, but now you can see like most of these people, like they're all working, you know, have jobs 5 days a week, men and women, children. So for them, it's really totally out of any idea that they, in the evening, they don't go to the sport group, they go to a meeting, and then somehow you ask them, can you help us print, or can you finance to print some posters, or can you write something? Mm-hmm. Of course, I mean, we still have the artists, but I can see for the other people that it takes them for mostly a year or 2 years to really enter in this new space where they think like, oh, we have neighbors, hey, what do you do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's like half a year, and then another half year maybe you have a beer together. So because most people are now so, not now, but for a long time already, focused, you know, on paying the high rent, making enough money. So it's really difficult. Well, when I started, I was on Social Security for a while. You know, I could, you know, have my own time if I wanted to work on the neighborhood for like 5 evenings. No problem.
Time,
yeah.
Time is of essence. I think that's very much the key to what you think. Yeah. Yep. That is also the reason why this city sometimes feels so individualistic. And it is because everything is driven by value and effect. I think, but for you and the Kinkerstedt in the laundromat, you started involving the neighborhood around you straight away, right?
Yeah. So we do, we also work with children there. We did a workshop, a flag making workshop, and Yeah, there were actually a lot of parents with young children that were really like, wow, there's finally an beer center and a community center for the neighborhood again, because...
So something that took my heart.
Right? Yeah. That's, and they said, like, there's only if you want to sit here with your child, you have to buy, like, an oatmeal cappuccino for €5, you know? Like, it became a neighborhood. So, yeah, we definitely try to get the neighborhood involved. And the cool thing is that you... still enter a neighborhood, of course. Like, it's been heavily gentrified, but there's also like the ice cream store next to it. There's the dinner lounge, which are amazing people, this clothing store. And these are actually the people that are, maybe by media, are seen as not necessarily vibing with squatters. Like, Pau News goes there and like, dinner lounge, what do you think of like these squatters? And like, yeah, they're super nice, really friendly so far, totally fine. Like, they know as well. And I think that's really... maybe also to come back to your question, like how to organize. I think for squatters or anarchists, let's say, sometimes there's obvious reasons to dress completely in black and to be anonymous. But I think it's really our task as well to go to neighborhoods that are where people are that are not familiar with this history and that might do have anarchist beliefs as well. Example is, for instance, Verdedig Noord, which is a neighborhood collective fighting against gentrification and for community. And I think a lot of these people would like to squat, but then squatting is dangerous, and it's like more dangerous if you're a person of color than for me. I'm white, by the way. That's the thing we have to realize, I guess. And of course, like, counterculture should be one thing, but then in the end, if we really want to start the movement, we really have to work together with Verdedig Noord or Invest. You have New Invest in Verzet at the moment. Because I think, yeah, with only the counterculture, we're not going to make it. We really need to, yeah, have a mass again, like in the 80s or in the 60s.
Does that then also involve places who have that history in Squam? Like, would you involve the OT or the OP or W149?
Yeah, definitely. And I think also what you said, like, this network is there. Like, we often went to Oki to have meetings. And this is like maybe a bigger city network, which is also underground, a bit hidden for obvious reasons. But then in combination with involving the neighborhood, I think then you have something really interesting. And it's already happening, of course, in places. But I think, yeah, sometimes also the neighborhood is there and we don't really see it or something, like, which happens in North a lot. Like,
In our area now, it's also, of course, the expats, they all come from, stay for a little while, but they all come from, I don't know, they kind of understand the countercultural part. And
yeah,
they want to do something for the area they stay or not, because they are working a lot. But there's also people that want... And I don't know if they become volunteers, but they at least want to come and help in a way. So that's a dynamic thing that's changed the group and the Oki as well as a volunteer group. The meetings change a lot with too many people changing by moving. So that's new, difficult to come back maybe to the direct action part, but it's still happening a lot. So things are going like laagjes.
Mm.
And maybe sometimes it will interfere again. I don't know.
Do you have as a cookie, do you guys talk about a strategy of how to get the neighborhood involved or how to?
The neighborhood part is. Yeah, of course, still with the kids program, we still have to deal with the local, with the area a lot. And for the music, we're not that much focused on the area. And the Vondel Park is, of course, now with the good weather, it's more like, people will not come out of the park anymore to see a band in a dark place. So they have their drinks in the park and they hang out there. But at the moment, we're not really focused on the city around us that much. More in a bigger place. contact with the groups from Brussels, Antwerp, Leipzig, Germany, that's Berlin. So more like, yeah, try to do as much as possible to keep the people coming with their stories and keep this kind of...
Maintaining the network.
Yeah, the DUI network that there was, and especially also with the squads. People that want to change to Amsterdam, yeah, we can help a little bit and maybe be part of that structure.
I think there's also always the friction, you know, because the same is for W139. Is, you know, there's not that much money, you know, and as an art space, you cannot make that much money from bars or parties or whatever. You don't have endless volunteers. So, and then still, you know, if you want to organize something for the neighborhood, you know, you need like 3-4 volunteers for a whole evening. But your main focus, you know, at least in the New York tonight, is to have good art shows. Because if you leave that idea, you know, if you don't have good music anymore, well, then you become like a social cultural center, just, you know, for fun or whatever, to entertain the neighborhood. And also, I think it's important for people when you bring your energize the neighborhood, that they also should feel that they should put their own energy in it and not like, you know, consume your energy as an art space all the time, you know. Because of course that's what the city is doing. They're capitalizing on you all the time, on the hockey, on, you know, what you're doing in your neighborhood, because it makes it attractive for people. Yeah. Whatever you do, it's always they capitalize on it. And the politicians, you know, they...
Yeah, and I think that's like with Otto Malcolm and Malcolm Clark, we never bought something. And I think that by that, you kind of bypass this. Like, as long as it's all free, you see that neighbors actually help a lot and people help to clean up. And it's really, you say like, oh, it's all free. And then, oh, I have to do some kind of transaction. Like, people really notice that. But then the moment you charge something, people don't think about it anymore.
So. No, it's either, I also found that in my 40 years, sometimes with artists also, it's better to organize something and say there's no money.
Yeah.
Because then the artist or whoever is involved will do whatever they want to do, you know. And as soon as you say like, oh, every artist gets like €1,000, then everybody starts to think like, oh, for €1,000, I can weld a rack like this and buy this, and then the rest is for me.
Yeah.
So you get really bad shows. You know, so that's the problem always, because you cannot have endless volunteering people coordinating the art space. So at a certain moment, you're obliged to pay artists, you know, and they don't pay you enough. So the situation becomes even more difficult. Or if you have people working for you, you have to pay €17 an hour, which makes it more difficult, you know. So now the pressure comes from more sides, even to keep a building like the W139 open and floating and still kind of like, so you can afford and pay people. Because, for example, like, you know, you have 2/3 of your budget on your own income, but for a place like the W139, they want, I think, if you get funding, you need 20% own income. Well, that's already, you know, a job for two people to really make that happen. And if you can't pay them, so it's all the time the struggle. They capitalize all the time on you. They nibble away your time and energy to do more and pay less all the time. So,
do you see an alternative to that? I think it's the same question that Mark asked before. It's like, can we... You know, within the climate that we have and within the system that we live in, is there a way to really create this alternative system where you're no longer dependent? Or is then squatting the only answer? Is that the only way to...
Well, squatting is only the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. You can squat a building for 1 or 10 years or 15 years, but at the end, you need an end plan, a few, like... And that's what we did with the W139. We said, in the long run, we're going to buy it. You know, and then even if people said it's not possible, you cannot buy it, whatever, we just put all the energy on that goal all the time, you know. the same as like now we keep going on like artist ideas are first, you know, because for this changing world, for a changing city, we need the artists, the writers, the filmmakers, you know, their ideas, they need to come and they need to stand up with the new ideas. So it's, yeah, well, there's so many points of views, you know, the politicians want you to have this point of view, the city wants you to have this point of view. But I think the WLT line survived because we always stayed on the focus for the artists, whatever happened. And as a service to the city, so not as a service to one director or one person, you know, who's becoming famous or whatever. So it's a service, a gift to the city. And well, as soon as you can make that really, well, visible for a politician, you know, they might soften a little bit, but usually not.
Yeah. I think squatting is one technique, and also really like not the goal, but just the technique, right? And if you see like at the housing demonstrations or when it's really big this year throughout the Netherlands, you also see like political parties like Bijeen that are also really saying like you start in the neighborhood and this bottom down idea. I really believe in that, and I think that's, yeah, that can manifest itself in many different ways, of course, but I think there is the answer somewhere there. So this power of this collective, and not only squatting but also maybe occupying, rent strikes, starting stuff with your neighbors, basically getting to know your neighbors. It's also just a really easy thing that everyone can do, because there's so many people that don't know their neighbors, you know. And then if you mobilize, then you have a movement, and I think then you can really change things. I still believe in that.
Yeah. Maybe to say sorry. No, that is one of the reasons why we started this series of conversation. It's because there is so little knowledge about the history of you know, the struggle for housing. We know very little about all the struggles that have shaped the city as we know it today.
Mm.
So in order to be able to articulate a movement today, it's also very important to know what happened in the 1920s.
How to use or re-initiate those strategies and really see like what does the city need and how do we communicate with one another. I think the community aspect is super important, because that is how the city is falling apart, and it is this triangle that is no longer in balance.
Right.
And if you get to know your neighbors and you invite them in, or you invite them to participate, even in something small as a communal garden, you take back the ownership of the city, which is the right to the city.
But we have to manage, okay? So, but that is a beginning, because what we have to manage is to change the policy of the municipality towards the question of housing. What we were mentioning, why we are also, why is it so difficult to organize? It's because a student is paying 800, 900 euros for a room. And also, you know, a young professional.
It's basically the fact that that everything is driven by economics. And that means to able to afford living in Amsterdam, you need to have at least a full-time job, if not two full-time jobs. So you don't have time to mobilize yourself or to get politically involved. And I think that is, you know, so it is also about taking, we talked about time earlier, but it is about taking back time and to see how you can invest that time into the community around you.
Yeah, and in order to take more time, we need that the rents are regulated by the state, that they cannot be more than X amount. We need to get more cooperative housing. We need to develop, we really need to claim a different regime on housing, because it's the basis of life.
And it's a right.
Yeah.
It's not a...
And it's our right. It's not, we are not just being capricious. It's like the right. You need a roof in order to do the rest. And this roof has to be affordable. I cannot pay 60-70% of my income for the roof. Because then I have no capacity to move anything. I have no capacity to make a radio program. I have no capacity to make a magazine. I have no capacity to make anything just to pay my roof. And I'm not alive to pay my roof. I'm alive because I'm human with many interests, many things to do in my life rather than only paying the rent.
Yeah. And it's the so in Deutsch Grundwet, what's the English word for that?
I won't think about it in a second.
I really Constitution. Yes. It says housing is a right, but the state should also care of proper housing. And then what proper housing is the state is not providing that for everyone. But then it is housing, but also a fair price indeed for social housing, for instance, and answer. But then these waiting lists are 14 years, you know?
And social housing, now we are looking into social housing. We get sometimes invited to look at a house, but they are like 35 square meters. Basically, all the houses that they are living as social housing, they are tiny, 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 which they are fine if you are a student or something. But if you are two people, for example, I mean, I don't know what's your idea of a house, but we need a bit of space and intimacy. You know, you cannot just live on top of each other. So basically, the policy of the state is to reduce social housing for people with really lower incomes that they have no other choice. And I don't think that should be the concept behind social housing. Behind social housing should be the concept that a lot of people, they don't want to own a house because they don't live, they don't believe that houses should be owned. And you know, so a big amount of the houses from a city should be there to be used. And then you pay a fair rent. But it should not be some kind of welfare or some kind of, you know, like only for if you are super poor, then you go live there. No, we should.
I would even that is restricted, because if you are super poor and the waiting list is 20 years, you cannot afford to wait 20 years to get a space.
And then you get it at a 30 square meter space.
Yeah, or not even where you move to Almere.
Yeah, there's no space.
And even there it's nigh impossible. Hey guys, it's I just wanted to say also, because I know some of you have to leave, it's 10 to 12.
Well, there's one more thing I think we should think about is like violence, you know, because a lot of, you know, like Mark, what you say is what I experienced in the first 10 years, you know, squatting, is like they never listen, you know, unless something really happens. So, you know, I had endless meeting in the town hall and whatever. And, you know, they keep talking to you and dividing you and giving a little bit here, a little bit there. But as soon as they see a big poster on their own walls from the town hall, they start, oh, wow, you know. And even if it's only me printing the poster and sticking it up there, it frightens them, you know. Because usually the politicians, so they're always in the safe space, in their offices, whatever. They're never out there. They never see a robbery. They never see police coming towards them or whatever. So, but as soon as you push them a little further, and that's what I experience, a lot of people are against that or are really afraid of, you know, doing something real. And I found out in my neighborhood, you know, because we would have these meetings with town people, and they would come to our neighborhood because we had a special space where we could have the meetings, but we would always make sure that we would have huge posters stick up around our neighborhood with aggressive text, so that they were really scared, you know, that they knew they had to do something about it instead of like just keep going talking. And
I think taking back the rights of the city is also taking back the walls of the city and using public space.
Yeah, because one of the things I noticed, you know, when the whole discussion in my neighborhood was there was too much tourist. What did the shop owners do? They made posters. They said, this is entered. No, that's the counterparts. No, the shop owners, you know, who were like liking the tourists to come in, they said they put sticks up posts that said red light district, entertaining district. So they pushed away the idea of living. And so then the city made these idiot huge posters with people on
it. Yeah,
that's really sad because those people don't live here. And
not like stock photography.
Yeah, it's horrible.
Yeah, but so you could see it. The immediate, so, you know, a lot of people who live there saw these posters like entertainment area. Oh, I live in an entertainment area. Not true, you know.
Yeah.
So